We're remembering actor Bruno Kirby. Kirby died this week from complications from leukemia. In addition to being the character actor who was Billy Crystal's sidekick in When Harry Met Sally and City Slickers, he was featured in Good Morning Vietnam, This Is Spinal Tap, Donnie Brasco, and made many television appearances. In City Slickers, Kirby's on vacation with two buddies in a Western cattle drive. In this scene, they're taking turns describing the best day of their lives, and it's Kirby's turn.
I'm 14 and my mother and father are fighting again. You know, because she caught him again. Caught him. This time the girl drove by the house to pick him up. And I finally realized he wasn't just cheating on my mother. He was cheating on us. So I told him. I said, you're bad to us. We don't love you. I'll take care of my mother and my sister. We don't need you anymore. And he made like he was going to hit me, but I didn't budge. Then he turned around and he left. Never bothered us again. But I took care of my mother and my sister from that day on. That's my best day.
What was your worst day?
Same day.
Bruno Kirby in a scene from the 1991 film City Slickers. In 1974, in The Godfather Part II, he played the young Pete Clemenza, one of the neighborhood Sicilians who partnered up with Vito Corleone in the early days. He spoke Italian for the role.
C'è un amico che ha un tappeto buono. Può essere che a tua moglie ci piace.
Certo, ma in Africa abbiamo solo di pacattare il tappeto.
No, Ido la va a regalare. Un saccio come a ringraziare.
That was Bruno Kirby as Clemenza saying to Vito, a friend of mine has a nice rug. Maybe your wife would like it. It would be a present. I know how to return a favor. Robert De Niro played the young Vito. Terry Gross spoke with Kirby in 1990 after the release of the film The Freshman, a movie filled with affectionate references to the Godfather films. Marlon Brando plays Carmine Sabatini, a comic turn on his role as Vito. Bruno Kirby plays his nephew Vic, a low-level con man. In this scene, one of his marks, played by Matthew Broderick, demands his money back.
If you don't give me the money, like, immediately...
Clark, I would love nothing more than to be able to do just that. However, here we run into an awkward moment. Tragically, I suffer from a gambling problem. Right after I left you, I placed a wager on a horse. Predictably.
You lost my money on a horse. All of it.
In retrospect, I'm not sure it actually was a horse.
Oh, God.
When you were preparing to play Vic, did you walk around New York a lot looking for scam artists?
The first thing I did was, when I was doing Tin Men with Danny DeVito, he introduced me to a great guy named Cha-Cha. And Cha-Cha became a friend, and he has a little Italian cafe on Mulberry Street called Cha-Cha's in Bocca Lupo Cafe. And the minute I got this part, I called up Cha-Cha, and I said, look, here's what I need. Can I come down there with you guys? Can I hang out with you and your friends? Can I see a little bit about what that life down there is like? And Cha-Cha said, sure, come on, forget about it, anything for you. When I went down there, and Cha-Cha isn't a scam artist by any means, but he was able to let me see, you know, he took me where they bought their clothes, he showed me where their loyalty was, he showed me the Chinese restaurants they like to eat at 2 o'clock in the morning, where they like to go gambling. And he was a very big help, and without him and his friend Butchie, then I could have never done it. In terms of scam artists and things like that, I never look for the negatives in my character. I can't play negatives. I don't think people in life, when they get up in the morning, you know, have negative ideas. And I think what Vic says every morning when he gets up is, what can I do today to please the person in the world who I respect and love the most, my Uncle Carmine? What can I do to win his love and respect?
Marlon Brando plays an organized crime head, and everybody comments on his remarkable resemblance to the Godfather in the movie. And there's a lot of Godfather jokes in this movie. Now, you were in Godfather 2, right?
Yeah.
Now, I have to confess to you, I don't remember your part in it. And
well, that's okay. That's a compliment.
Because I wouldn't recognize you in it?
I gained 60 pounds. I had my hairline shaved back. I spoke all Sicilian. I played Clemenza as a young man. When De Niro comes to America, I take him to steal a rug, and I introduce him to a life of crime. So I don't mind that you don't recognize me. To someone who likes to play different characters, that's a good thing.
How come you gained 60 pounds for it?
Well, the character of Clemenza is a very heavy character later on in the film. So I knew that we had to show that stuff starting to happen even in his youth.
See, I've always thought of you as the kind of actor who maybe grows a mustache for a role, you know, but who doesn't, not the kind of actor who puts on 60 pounds for a role.
Well, I do whatever is necessary. I mean, yeah. If you see The Freshman, that's not my hairline. That bald spot isn't mine.
Mm-hmm.
That receding hairline isn't mine. That's stuff I found from hanging out in Little Italy. You know, the character in When Harry Met Sally has a fat pad on at the beginning of the film. People don't even see it. But after he marries Carrie Fisher, and she changes his life for the better, I took off the fat pad to show some kind of a, you know, she's made him a better person. She's got him exercising. He's not just sitting around bars at night drinking with the guys. He's doing things.
The movie that I really first started tracking you in, where I first started saying, oh, watch this guy, was Good Morning Vietnam. I don't know why it took me that long, but you play the lieutenant who thinks that Robin Williams should really stick to the Mantovani playlist.
Yes.
Tell me more about what you did to make this character so funny, because I really thought that you were actually one of the funniest things in the movie.
Well, you see, you can't really play a result. So I think the humor, when I approach a character, whether it's a comedy or a drama, I just approach it from their point of view. Now, what makes it funny sometimes is if a person is so sincere about their point of view that they can only see their point of view. So I think that's what gave that character the humor.
Furthermore, you want to stick to playing normal modes of music, not wild stuff. Those we would find acceptable here would include Lawrence Welk, Jim Nabors, Mantovani.
Percy Faith,
good! Andy Williams, Perry Como, and certain ballads by Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Would Bob Dylan be out of line?
Way, way, way out of line.
You played it as someone who really believes that they're right and
totally
smart and talented.
Totally.
And they really don't get it at all. They have no idea.
They have no idea, and I don't believe that this character woke up every morning and said, today I'm going to be the biggest jerk the United States the United States Army ever produced. I think when he woke up every day and said, I have a great idea. These men are coming back from battle. Let me play soothing music for them.
Your father was an actor, right?
He still is. Great actor, Bruce Kirby.
What roles is he best known for?
Well, he was last seen, he was the head detective in Throw Mama from the Train. The first time around, when Jamie Lee Curtis had her TV series, he played her dad. And we're very, very close. We were born the same day. When I was born, I think my father just said, well, my best friend has arrived. And even though I was a kid, he would take me every place with him. He took me to Lee Strasberg's classes, and he'd say, sit down, just be quiet. He'd come home from work like 2 o'clock in the morning working as a waiter. He'd pick me up. He'd take me to 42nd Street. And we would watch Fellini films and Brando films. I was just a little kid, but we hung out together.
Did you like spending that much time with your father when you were young?
I loved it. It was sensational.
So did this get you excited about movies and about acting?
Well, you know what I think I saw? I looked at these actors, his friends, and I saw the camaraderie. I saw the stories, the way they would kid each other, put each other on. And I think I wanted to be part of it.
Was it helpful to have a father who was an actor, but not a father who was overwhelmingly famous, who you felt that you could never, ever live up to?
Well, I wouldn't know about the second part of it because, you know, I consider my dad to me knows more about acting than anybody I've ever met. He knows more about my acting than anyone. I mean, I remember when I was getting ready to do Good Morning Vietnam, I always give him my scripts and we always talk about my roles. I give him the Good Morning Vietnam script, and we're going to shoot the film in Bangkok. So I go by his house to say, you know, to go over the script a little bit, but basically to say goodbye. It's the day before I leave. And I'm kind of running, you know, that kind of place you get when you're thinking about a trip, and he's talking to me about the character, and I'm just shaking my head, yes, 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 yes. And he says, okay, goodbye. I say, goodbye, Dad, I love you. And I start to leave, and he goes, wait, 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 Bruno, one more thing. I said, yeah, Dad, what is it? He said, you know, I think this is the kind of character who would send jokes to Reader's Digest. And I said, yeah, okay, take care, I love you, goodbye. And I find myself on the set with Barry Levinson, and I say, you know, Barry, I just want to say something here. I just want to say that, tell Robin that Reader's Digest is publishing 2 of my jokes. And Barry, because he's got his own kind of genius, says, okay, but they're just considering publishing 2 of your jokes.
Do you often do that, by the way, add things to a character?
Yeah, constantly.
What's an example of something you added in The Freshman?
In The Freshman? Wow, let's see. Oh, I know some stuff that we added. Marlon is so facile. He has this thing where he starts, when the kid sits down, he says, you want a nut? And the kid says, no. I say, none for me, Uncle Carmine. And he says, you want some coffee to the kid? I say, none for me, Uncle Carmine. Well, that stuff, that part of the relationship wasn't scripted. In other words, we didn't know Marlon was going to offer him a nut. But I just instinctively knew that if I acted as if he was offering something to me, too, that Marlon would totally ignore me. And it would give the character a different kind of shading. And that's one of the things that just kind of happened as we were shooting.
Do you have one of your earlier films that you wish were better known now because you really liked your performance in it?
I liked my performance in a film called Texas Legend, but they changed the title to Kiss My Grits. They did this to see if they could get me to kill myself, but it was one of the most painful experiences I've ever had in my life. I did this movie. It was produced by Tony Quinn. Bruce Davison was in the movie, did a wonderful job. And I played a sheep herder from Texas. So I went down to Texas and I worked on a sheep ranch. And he was just a good old boy and he fell in love with this girl who didn't really care about him at all. And I thought I did a lot of wonderful work. But the company who released the film ended up doing a drawing in Variety of Bruce Davison and myself with our pants dropped, looking over our shoulders, saying, kiss our grits. And the film was one of those films that shows up at about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sorry that I wasn't able to do, that character someplace else where more people might have seen him. But otherwise, I don't have too many regrets.
Another question about The Freshman. When you were playing scenes with Brando, did it take a while before you stopped feeling intimidated? Did you feel intimidated
at
all?
No, not at all. He takes that right away from you. The first time I met him, I was waiting for him to come to rehearsal at Andy Bergman's. We're waiting. Matthew's getting a little edgy. Penelope Ann Miller's getting a little edgy because you're meeting Marlon Brando. You can't deny that. And he walks in and he looks at me and he says, the last time I saw you, you had on a brown derby and a long coat and you were stealing a rug. Come here. And he gives me this hug. And basically what he's doing is he's absorbing all of my tension into himself. And 5 minutes later, you turn around and you're sitting around this table and you're working with somebody who I think is as good as it gets, and you're totally relaxed because of him.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
Bruno Kirby speaking with Terry Gross in 1990. Kirby died this week of complications from leukemia. He was 57. He survived by his father, Bruce, his wife, Lynn, and other family members.